Good morning. You're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with Sarah Hager. Sarah is a research engineer and instructor at the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus. And we're going to be talking all about septic systems today, how they work, and how to use and maintain them. At the end, we'll also talk about landscaping options for your septic mound.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today, and we'll be talking about septic systems, which is something that a lot of people in Lake County have for their wastewater treatment. And so just starting off with the basics, what is a septic system and how does it work?
Right. So what a septic system is really a mini wastewater treatment plant in your backyard. So the typical septic tank leaves the house, often via gravity, and goes into a septic tank. And the septic tank is just the first part of the treatment, but it's really important because in that tank, solids settle out, heavier material, lighter material floats to the top, and then the cleaner effluent, which is the layer in the middle, then travels to the next treatment component. Very often, that's just a soil treatment system, either a trench system or an above-ground mound system. And that's actually where a majority of the treatment happens, particularly the removal of bacteria and viruses.
And then that solid component, that's just what gets pumped out when you have your...
Right. So in the septic tank itself, there is some anaerobic digestion. So there are special microbes that like to live in that septic tank, and they will further decompose. When we eat something, we start to take energy out of it and break it down. And then the microbes that live in that tank continue that process of breaking down the organic material, some of the cleaners and chemicals we put into the system. And then what they aren't able to remove, some of it will settle out and some of it will actually go out to the drain field and will serve for food that live in the soil.
And I think some people in Lake County have problems because we have pretty heavy clay soils and we also have pretty shallow bedrock in areas. Mm-hmm. And so it can be difficult to figure out the best system to put in that area. What kind of septic systems work best for those types?
Right. Well, there's kind of two different issues you just brought up. But what I will tell you is the most common solution to both of those problems is a mound system. And the reason why people end up with mound systems is they don't have enough adequate soil on site to treat the wastewater. And with clay soils, you want to have the water as clean as possible. So when it gets into the clay, it is the easiest to be accepted. With bedrock, it's just simply that you don't have enough soil. So then we bring in the sand to achieve how much separation we need. And to get rid of the bacteria and viruses, we need 3 feet of soil. With the clay, again, the bigger issue is that the clay can take a lot more clean water than it can dirty water. So we make sure it goes through the sand so that when it hits the clay, it will be easier for the clay to accept.
Okay. What happens when dirtier water hits the clay? Does it just...
Well, then it's going to slow down because when it still has particularly a lot of organic material in it, it creates what's called a biomat. And so that will then kind of limit oxygen transfer into the system because it's going to actually absorb oxygen to break down the organic material. And that's not what we want. We want the clay to have to accept clean effluent at that point, which if it's gone through the sand, all of the organic material will have been removed.
Do you know what the common setbacks are for septic systems, say from a well or from your home?
Right. Well, those are very different. So the setback from your home or your property line is 10 feet. And people have to keep in mind that your home should include things like decks and other outbuildings, because there's kind of two issues. The biggest issue is just an accessibility in that we've seen people who put a deck over their septic tank and now it's time to come clean out their tank and the maintainer can't get at it. But also it could be possible that down the road, let's say you had a plug in your line from your house to your tank, or it needs to be replaced. And so that's the other really practical reason, because the tank itself doesn't leak any water. So then the drain field, on the other hand, we have a bigger setback because there's a lot of water going into the soil there. Mm-hmm. So the setback is still 10 feet from structures, but the setback, and particularly to wells or lakes or rivers or streams, does depend. So for wells, it's either 50 or 100 feet, depending upon how deep the well is and the quality of the well. And same issue with surface water. It depends on how pristine the water is. It varies from 50 to 100 feet. And that's something that if you don't know, your county can tell you for your specific lake or specific stream, how close they can be. The last thing you want to do is put something close to your septic that's going to add a lot of water. I mean, the average home with three people living in it puts about 75,000 gallons of water out a year.
Wow.
And the average drain field is like an area that's like 40 by 60, right? So 2,400 square feet. So you are putting feet of water in that area. So that's why it's really important where we site it, but also that we not put extra water there. So all the surface water from when it rains off of people's roofs, driveways, and certainly when you talk about a rainwater garden, the purpose of a rainwater garden is to infiltrate water. And we don't want that anywhere near our septic system. They're a great idea, just not by the septic.
Right. And then what are some of the limitations of septic systems and the benefits as far as treating both nutrients and bacteria?
Right. So a properly operating septic system, so, you know, one that meets the 3-foot separation requirement, will be removing 99.9999% of the bacteria and viruses. So the soil is a really effective treatment mechanism to deal with bacteria and viruses. Mm-hmm. So some of our older systems were put in too deep, and that's one of the reasons why people need to update their systems, is often they are not meeting that. And then there is the risk for bacterial contamination. But you have to keep in mind that a wastewater treatment plant is allowed to discharge, for instance, in the middle of summer when we could come in contact with that water, 200 is the amount of bacteria that can be in 100 milliliters of water. And our wastewater mm-hmm. is actually cleaner than that, leaving our septics. When it comes to nutrients, the main nutrient we're generally concerned about in Minnesota for lakes, rivers, and streams is phosphorus. Mm-hmm. And so phosphorus is really well absorbed under the soil. So basically the phosphorus is attracted to the soil particles. And so it can even, it can even get more complex than that. But our soils do a good job at removing phosphorus. Nitrogen, on the other hand, depends. And it depends on a couple of variables. So particularly if you, mound systems do remove more nitrogen than trench systems just because of the way they're designed. But that is the other key reason why we have setbacks to our wells, is if there are elevated levels of nitrogen, for instance, you may out of your septic system be putting out 20 milligrams per liter, and the actual allowable standard for drinking is 10. But by the time it travels all the way through the groundwater, mixes with the groundwater, it's very unlikely that you're going to have nitrate issues. But if anyone's concerned, it's something we recommend that people have their wells tested for nitrate and bacteria just to make sure, because it's often not your septic or it could be someone upstream of yours who maybe doesn't have a good system either, which is then more likely to be contaminating your well.
So moving on to sort of everyday usage, I know there's a lot of recommendations as far as what you can put down the drain or what products you can use. What are some general guidelines to follow as far as what you can and can't put down your sink drain or...
Right. So I tell people that if you shouldn't use any product, that you need to put gloves on.
Okay.
So things that are really harsh, things that are really extreme sanitizers. So we use natural bacteria in our tank and in our soil treatment system. And when you have a strong disinfectant, it doesn't know who the good bacteria are and the bad bacteria. It kills all the bacteria. And it's not to say that one cup of bleach, if you used one cup of bleach, you cannot wipe out all the bacteria in your system. There's so many of them. But to the same degree, it's kind of a cumulative impact. So the more natural-based cleaners you can use, the better off you are. So if I always say, like, you know, could you eat cleanser? Well, you could. You might not feel great, but it isn't going to kill you. Where there are products out there that, you know, you think about some of the drain cleaners that people use that are really toxic. And products are actually labeled from the term toxic to things that just have a caution on them. And so the ones that are toxic are the ones when I were a kid, we'd put a Mr. Yuck symbol on, because if you swallow it, you're going to go to the emergency room and who knows if you're going to make it, right? So choosing as natural-based products as possible, things that are labeled biodegradable, things that don't have any phosphorus in them, and just really avoiding products that are strong sanitizers.
Is there any labeling system for products?
Well, the only one that's out there is actually the one that I just told you, and it goes from caution to danger to toxic.
Okay.
And it's not developed for septic systems. It's developed for public health. Like, because it's really weighing the risk to your health, but I can tell you the risk to our health and the risk to the microbes and the bacteria in the system isn't that different. I mean, it is, but it's at the same degree, they're definitely related.
Yeah.
There is a really good website put out by the Environmental Working Group. Mm-hmm. So it's a website that actually rates products from an A to an F. And it's both their environmental impact and their impact to public health. And it's not even just cleaning products. Like, it does cosmetics and things in your garage and, you know, all kinds of products you might buy. And so if you're wondering, like, what is the best dishwashing soap? And it's a nonprofit. It's all brands you've heard and read of before. But yet no one's making money on it, because that is the risk, because a product can put whatever label they want a label on there's no one regulating if it says natural. Right. Like they have, I mean, there's some things I have to be honest about, like what's in there, what's their active ingredient, but those labels aren't regulated. So that's why I encourage people to go to that website and they will just tell you again from all these factors, what are the safest products to use. And even though those weren't done for septic systems, they're going to help septic systems perform better.
And how about things like food grease?
So food grease in particular should not go down the drain. So it should be captured in a can and put in your or in some container that won't melt probably because it's usually hot when you're putting it in there, but not down the drain. And related to that is garbage disposals. So in general, we do not recommend food waste go into a system. Our regulations in Minnesota do require that if you have a garbage disposal, you have an extra big septic tank. So, and that means you have 50% more capacity than a home that doesn't. So we, and a lot of states don't have that. So we kind of are building in the safeguard if people have a garbage disposal. But the fact of the matter is that you're better off composting that waste, and reusing it instead of sending it down the drain. And that's really what you do when you compost, right? Is you make food that can go back on your garden that can help your soil be more productive. And I think that's a much better use. And we just tell people if they have a garbage disposal, because some people already have it, just to use it as little as possible. Because ultimately, when you have a garbage disposal, there's two issues. One is you're putting extra food into it. The second thing is that food that you put in there is ground into tiny little pieces. And those tiny little pieces don't settle out as well in the septic tank. So there's a lot of settling that happens in the tank. And like I said, big solids settle out a lot better than little solids.
Okay. It's mainly a problem with that septic tank and not so far with the field.
Well, so then if your septic tank is letting more solids out, not as much settling, then more are getting to your drain field.
Okay. And it can clog up.
Right. It's just something eventually. So eventually everyone's septic system is going to fail. They don't last forever. So anything we can do, and yet I've yet to find the person who's super excited to pay for a new septic. So if anything we can do to put less food out there, it's just going to help the drain field last longer. And that's what everybody wants.
Yeah. And I think there's been this ban put into place for these microplastics, but otherwise I would ask about that as well.
No, so microplastics have been banned. I think they're still in some products because there's a phase out period, but there's a bigger or a related issue, and that is microfibers. So for instance, I just saw a study that was published by Patagonia where they took one load of like fleece jackets and 100,000 microfibers came off one load. And so you may not have Patagonia products, but every load of wash that you do, there is, I would estimate just on the washing machine I grew up with, a handful of lint. Mm-hmm. And much of that lint is tiny little fibers that can potentially pass through your septic tank. And I think that's another reason why our septic systems eventually fail.
Okay.
So if we can hold more of those back, so there, for instance, if you go online, there's a product called the Septic Protector, and it's designed to go on your washing machine discharge line, and they say for most homes, it'll fill up every week. It's like a canister that you take out and then put in the garbage, and if you think about that's a lot of lint, right, that's going into people's septic systems. And we don't know well how much of that is settling out or floating out, like how much of it is passing through the tank. But we know there's, because they're finding all these microfibers now all over the place, so in the environment.
Yep. How about as far as stuff with the toilet? Lots of things are labeled flushable nowadays, flushable wipes, or some women put their sanitary products down the toilet.
Yep. So the only thing that should go in a toilet is what comes from our bodies and toilet paper.
Okay.
So the toilet is not a garbage can, and flushable means exactly that it will flush. But a majority of the other products that people are putting down the drain do not break down. Even things as simple as Kleenex. Because if you think about Kleenex, it's much stronger. It's much more tightly woven. And I can't say that one Kleenex is going to ruin your system, because sometimes you'll have visitors at your house who may flush things. Most of what will happen is it'll float up to the tank and it'll be there the next time the maintainer comes to clean your tank. But if you are doing that all the time, and people even do things like flush cigarette butts and they just don't understand that their toilet is not a garbage can, and it absolutely shouldn't be, because it has the risk, and some of those things can carry over and then get through your pump and can cause problems with your pump, or even get ground up by your pump and then get sent out to your soil treatment system. So no feminine products, no prophylactics, no, just really nothing besides what I said. I mean, really, toilet paper does break down, and the simple test, and we do this with kids sometimes, if you take toilet paper and you put it in a jar and you shake it, You shake it for 10 seconds, which is kind of like flushing your toilet, and it's already almost broken down.
Yeah.
Where if you do that with a Kleenex, with a flushable wipe, with a Q-tip, with like even like those, you know, like a cotton ball, they just don't break down. So they're just going to build up and cause problems in your tank. And, you know, this is actually true if you live in the city. There's been big issues with flushable wipes in municipalities, and they don't want all that stuff that people flush either. The first spot when you get to a wastewater treatment plant is a big grate that catches all the stuff that people flush. And so then they take that all and landfill it. So we are just better off putting it into our garbage cans as opposed to sending it down the drain where it can cause problems.
I'd just like to remind everyone, you're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with U of M research engineer and instructor, Sarah Hager, and we're talking about septic systems.
Another question I had was about water conservation in your house. Like, what if you have a big laundry day and you decide to do 5 loads or something? How is the septic system sized for your house, and sort of are there limitations on how much water you should use in a day?
Right. So every septic system is designed for how many bedrooms the house is, because we don't know how many people are going to live in a house. So you can think about, there can be a 3-bedroom house with one person living in it, and there can be a 3-bedroom with 6 people living in it. And obviously the 6 people are going to use a lot more water. So we, again, design it based on bedrooms. That being said, conservation is still a good thing, because when you use less water, there's more time in each of the components for treatment to happen, and it will help your system last longer. So the problem with something like Saturday laundry day is that on that day, you could potentially exceed the capacity of the system. And what that can do is cause, for instance, solids that were stored in the septic tank in that sludge layer to suspend up. So you're much better off doing a load or two a day than doing having high peak days. And we're all going to have a high peak day, right? It might be the day you have graduation or over the holidays when there are more people there. One day alone isn't going to cause great harm to your septic system. But more regularly, if you can think about spreading out your usage, it's going to help your system last longer.
And now moving on to maintenance, how often does a septic system require maintenance? And what are the different types of maintenance that you as a homeowner would carry out, or you would call someone in to take care of?
So from the state code perspective, every septic system that's conventional, that just has a tank to a soil treatment system, needs to be evaluated every 3 years to determine if pumping is needed. And the reason why the code doesn't say you have to pump the tank is, going back to the analogy we just had, if one person is living in that house, it very likely may need a different maintenance frequency than a family of six, because they're putting a lot more solids out there. But again, we don't know who's going to be living in the house, and there are other issues that can come up during that time period aside from maintenance. So during a typical service visit, they will determine if the tank needs to be pumped, and 99% of the time they end up cleaning the tank while they're there, because they're already there. But during that time, they'll also make sure that the tank is in good conditions. There are baffles in the tank that are important. They'll check that the pump and the alarm are operating properly if you have one of those. They'll check the caps on the system, make sure nothing's been hit by the lawnmower. And those really are the kind of activities that homeowners should be doing as well. They should be, you know, for sure once a year, just walking over where their tank and their drain field are, and make sure there's no problems. You know, make sure that the gophers haven't started to dig in it. Make sure their kid didn't hit the cap with the lawnmower. So, and those are things that a homeowner can fix or replace. The other thing that's really important is that tank maintenance lids be secured. Just this last year, and it was actually along the North Shore, I think it was outside of Two Harbors, a little boy fell into a septic tank and died because the lid wasn't secure. And that's something that, again, the homeowner can make sure their lids are on tight, and that in this case, theirs was one that needed to be screwed down. It wasn't screwed down properly. So that, along with just making sure it's in good working order. And if there are problems, they're better off fixing them as opposed to waiting for a bigger problem to develop.
Sure. Is the problem gases that are in that tank, or?
As far as the danger?
Yeah.
Well, the usual way that people die in septic tanks is from drowning. So the tank itself is not a, it's considered to be a confined space, and the gases in there would eventually, the oxygen levels are too low. Mm-hmm. But the risk certainly for children is usually drowning. But yes, you never enter a septic tank, even septic professionals, because of the gases. So they have to have like masks on and have to have fresh air being pumped in.
Okay.
Because we as humans cannot tolerate low oxygen levels. Yeah. We pass out and very quickly die.
And I think a lot of people might be pretty surprised to know that they should also pump their tank maybe after construction of a new house.
Right. So yeah, if you have a remodel or you build a new home, just think about what's been going down the drain those during that time of construction. And we certainly do not encourage, for instance, paintbrushes to be washed down, but even just the people working in the house washing their hands, they're going to have a lot of construction debris. And so that can really start the tank off kind of on a bad start. Like there's a lot of stuff in there that's kind of toxic to microbes. So it's a great idea to get the tank pumped kind of when you start living back in the home. The other thing that often happens with newer systems that homeowners may need to be involved with is cleaning an effluent screen. Mm-hmm. So many of the more modern septic systems on the last kind of outlet of the septic tank, they'll have a screen, and that screen is usually cleaned every 6 months.
Oh.
And so that is something that a homeowner can do. Some homeowners will just have a septic professional come by and clean it for them, but some homeowners don't mind cleaning it. And there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. Like you want to be spraying it off back into the front of the septic tank, so the stuff that you wash off isn't going to run out to the drain field. Of course, you also don't want to put that into your yard. You should be wearing gloves while you do it, all things along those lines. Just thinking about that it's wastewater.
Sure. You kind of caught my attention saying not to wash paintbrushes into your septic system. What do people with septic systems, what should they do to...
Well, and again, so certainly, let's just talk about disposal first. So I'm sure Lake County has a hazardous waste disposal site that anytime you have things that are unused, including medicines, pharmaceuticals, none of that should ever go down the drain. So then the second question is, if you have a stream of water that you know is kind of toxic and you need to wash out your paintbrush, you're better off doing it outside because some of it will actually volatilize. And, you know, it's not great because there is still the risk that some of that could get into a surface water or groundwater, but it's better to give it chance to naturally dissipate into the air as opposed to going directly into the ground. And then it won't also be hurting the microbes that we need in our septic system.
What are some signs that a septic system is failing or that you need to call in some experts?
Right. So the most obvious one is that you'll see or smell effluent. So, and seeing is usually pretty obvious, but sometimes you don't know. It may just kind of be, particularly on a mound, at the toe of the mound. Is that water or is that sewage? Is sometimes hard to distinguish. So sometimes an odor can help you identify that. You can actually test that water to determine if it has contaminants in it. And that might be something that, again, you'll bring a professional in. Most homeowners aren't going to collect it and send it off to a lab. So that's a one sign. Another common sign that people may have is their pump may go out because it's been cycling too much. So that a dose will be sent out and then it drains back and the pump turns on again. So the pump is being overworked and their pump will burn out and they'll need a new pump. But it's not as simple as a new pump sometimes. Another problem sometimes people will see is they'll have gurgling drains because things aren't draining well. So anytime you have kind of plumbing issues that are kind of slow drains or gurgling drains, certainly back up into your house is another sign that you have a problem and that you're going to want to bring in a professional. And even spongy. Sometimes you'll walk out over your system. It shouldn't be spongy. You shouldn't have really, you know, particularly in one spot, really lush vegetation because it probably tells you that water's coming to the surface there. So it's another sign of a problem.
Do septic systems require any additives? Like I think there are some products that are marketed as restoring bacteria or that kind of thing.
No, there are no products that are available on the market that have any science behind them. So you're just better off, again, having your tank pumped regularly. So maybe someday we will have a product, but there, again, whenever we are approached by a company at the university saying, you know, our product's fabulous, our question is, can you show us some third-party independent research?
Mm-hmm.
And they never have any. So there's also the risk with some of them, particularly the ones that say, if you use our product, you'll never have to pump your tank. Well, there are things we want to settle out in the septic tank. We really do. And so if those things are being suspended and sent out to the drain field, they could cause problems. So you're just better off saving that money and having your tank cleaned regularly on that 3-year interval.
And then we do get a lot of questions in our office about landscaping around that mound. Mm-hmm. And what would you recommend for a plant cover on top mm-hmm. if people want to integrate native plants or pollinator habitat? But as far as maintenance, what kind of species to choose, and do you need to mow regularly?
Okay, I'll try to answer them all, but remind me if I forget some of them. So the first thing I wanted to tell you is on our website, we have a great fact sheet about landscaping mounds. So it will go into more depth than I'm going to remember while we're on the phone. So, And our website is just the word septic.umn, stands for University of Minnesota, umn.edu. Okay. And there's a whole section for information about homeowners, about odors and freezing and landscaping and winterizing for people who have cabins. There's a lot of really good resources there. We recommend people plant grass on the top of their mound and that they do regularly mow it. Although we do tell people going into fall, it's a good idea around Labor Day to stop mowing because it helps, your grass gets a little taller, it helps insulate and hold snow. Because snow is a great insulator. The winters where we have the most freezing problems is when we don't have any snow cover and it gets bitter, bitter, bitter cold. You know, like the 30 below winters. Mm-hmm. As far as other vegetation, so the real reason we want grass cover is that it's a really dense cover and that you won't have any bare spots. So if people want to, and I'm not against integrating, you know, flowers or other kind of native vegetation, the downside is that you often have, with perennial gardens and things along those lines, you have bare soil, particularly in the beginning. So if that's something people are really excited about, they really are going to need to heavily mulch until they really get the perennial garden established. So that's kind of a trade-off for some people. So the other thing I want to mention is trees. So across the top of your drain field and even over your tank, there should be absolutely no trees. And if I were going to plant new trees anywhere near my septic system, the closest I would start would be 20 feet, and I would recommend dwarf varieties. So you have to keep in mind, everything that you see above the ground is below the ground, and sometimes even wider. Particularly, it depends on the tree. And it's something I would certainly also, if you're buying trees, I would talk to someone selling trees because they can tell you which trees are more likely to go straight down versus have strong lateral roots. Something like a willow would be exactly what you don't want because they're known for seeking and loving water. But there are other, they don't even have to be water loving trees because the ones we don't want are that have super aggressive root structures. So no bushes across the top of your system, anything that's woody. So even a vine like wisteria that has a really thick vine, you don't want, because again, everything above the ground is going on below the ground and they're more likely to cause problems with your septic.
And you also mentioned wildlife, seeing gophers or something. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that there's no wildlife.
Yeah, you're right. So nothing digging, right? So, I mean, they're the obvious, some sort of other gopher. You don't want anything burrowing into your system. In general, they don't like sewage. They don't like the smell of sewage. So they're more likely to cause problems in systems that sit vacant, which a lot of cabins aren't used a lot. So it's just keeping an eye out for them. As far as other wildlife, I don't know that anyone does this, but you wouldn't want to feed deer on top of your mound either. You don't want anything that will cause regular traffic over your system because it's compaction. So really, along with your drain field, the heaviest thing that should ever drive across the top of your drain field is a small riding lawnmower. No vehicles, no snowmobiles, no traffic. And an animal has a very similar pounds per square inch than a lot of equipment does, right? They have little hooves. They're kind of big bodies. Yeah. And again, I don't know that there's a lot of livestock up in Lake County, but just again, the only one I could think of would be like feeding deer or something. You wouldn't want to do that across your system either.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you all for tuning in to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner was produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funding from NOAA, the Office for Coastal Management, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. Thanks again for listening. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.